Susie Wiles, science commentator. See, there's plenty of other science stories going on in 2021.
There are, and that's just amazing. And the pictures are absolutely incredible. You know, how well preserved all those echinoderms and everything are. It's just, yeah, I know I should get my head out of the COVID thing, but it's hard.
You need, they haven't got any glowing ones though, I don't think. Yeah, we need to get you back to your glowing, I've forgotten their names.
Bioluminescence.
Bioluminescence, yes. We need to get you back to your glowing little friends sometime in the near future. Andrew Holden, back to you. Let's throw forward a little bit. So as we were saying, from the media's perspective, it's been a tremendous result, and got Patrick Smalley sitting next to you as well, of course, whose business desk is in the process of being sold to the New Zealand Herald Group, the NZME Group. So if you look forward to 2022, in the first instance to you, Andrew, what are you seeing? Big one, obviously, at the start of the year is what happens with this TVNZ RNZ merger, if it goes ahead and what it looks like.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's going to be the most fascinating thing for the year. We know the governance group has put in its report, its business case, but also some recommendations around the legislation and the charter. So it will be fascinating to see where that goes to, and finally we'll get into the public domain as to what they're recommending. We know TVNZ, of course, lost their long-standing chief executive, and they now have a former national cabinet minister, and Simon Power is the chief executive officer, probably a good political play perhaps to get the Nats on side of the merger. So that will be the
fascinating thing. I see it completely differently from that. I think it's a big fat middle finger from the TVNZ board to the government for doing this merger at all. They've put in something completely inappropriate.
Go ahead, Patrick.
That's my view on the appointment of Simon Power, is that they've chosen someone who the government will find very difficult to stomach, who has no obvious media experience, and who comes in with a significant amount of commercial experience, which is what TVNZ is losing in Kevin Kenrick. And Kevin Kenrick is leaving, in my view, because there's no commercial need. There's no need for a commercial CEO at TVNZ, an emerged entity. I think it's a very odd appointment.
Does it matter? Simon Power's been the interim CEO of Westpac, so he's got some, you know, reasonable level experience alongside the political experience. But does it matter whether there's media experience in this role? Because Kenrick himself came from House of Travel, I think, initially, and then did have some telco experience on the way as well.
Yeah, that's a fair point. You don't have to have media experience, but I would have thought if you're expecting the cabinet to make a decision about a merger, taking your currently commercially focused organisation into a semi-public broadcasting merger, which is going to have a few challenges associated with merging those two cultures, let alone the two organisations, that you would possibly wait until February and start making an appointment that was appropriate to that task, rather than necessarily going out and telling headhunters that what you're looking for is somebody with deep commercial experience. It makes no sense to me at all.
It's an interesting point, Andrew, that they went on that search before the merger, remembering that as we're understanding it, as it's sort of coming out from the preliminary knowledge of what this set-up board has done, there's going to be an RNZ CEO, a TVNZ CEO, and then a CEO effectively of the merged entity, is there not? There's still another major appointment to come.
Oh, absolutely. Now, clearly that person will want to be choosing their key leadership team. So I take Patrick's point absolutely in that Power is an interesting one. I personally think they do need some media experience, particularly when you're going into this environment where you're looking at what the future of public broadcasting in whatever form it might be, especially around the digital side and where you play in terms of news for people and a whole range of different channels. So it's going to be a fascinating thing to watch, and particularly that initial board of the merge, if that's the way they're going, that single board, and then who that lead chief executive will be, will give a very strong indication of what the government thinks it might be trying to achieve.
Let's bring in our political commentators on this or anything else. Bridget Morton, putting your crystal ball or your crystal glasses or whatever you want to do to 2022.
I think I would like some more crystal glasses in 2022. That would be nice. But I don't think Santa's got any under the tree for me. For me, I think next year we're going to see, unfortunately, a lot of what we've seen this year. It's really clear that we have to live with a certain level of uncertainty. It's going to be that sort of year of vaccine, I think, you know, around, you know, 2.0, because really the boosters are going to be, I think, even more difficult in some ways to get into many people than the original vaccine. And I think also the issues of housing, child poverty, what we're going to do about, you know, getting the balance right on climate change action, all of those issues we've been dealing with this year but have been pushed slightly sideways are just going to be sort of accelerating in the need to deal with them. So I think from a political point of view, I think it's going to be a very, very robust year next year.
Neil?
Yeah, I think Omicron is the big unknown. If you look at what's happening overseas, it has the potential, once it reaches New Zealand and crosses the border, to stretch or even overwhelm our system. So that could be a very big issue. I think in the first quarter of the year, borders and immigration are going to be a big issue as we sort of decide how do we phase opening up to sort of stay safe from COVID while dealing with the issue of Kiwi stuff overseas and those skill shortages we have. The economy, I expect, will have increasing importance. We have very solid growth in unemployment figures, but inflation is going to be 5%, and National has already indicated they're going to make a big deal out of cost of living. Climate change, we have the emissions reduction plan coming out in May, and what looks to be a very climate-focused budget in May as well. And I think in terms of just the raw politics, the big question for 2022 will be whether Christopher Luxon sinks or swims. If he does well next year, we could have quite a close election. If he does poorly, you know, we could see National sinking again into that psychodrama. So that'll be the thing I'll be watching.
Back to you, Patrick. I know you've had your scrutiny well and truly on the public servants working very hard. I think, as I said in a discussion with Sir Brian Roche last week, you'd have to be, you know, if you're a fair-minded person at all, even if people are making mistakes, they are working incredibly, incredibly hard on this once-in-a-lifetime crisis, really. But doing Absolutely. Your job, you have certainly kept your scrutiny on how some of that, particularly public sector, private sector interface has been going. What do you hope is being learned, and what do you hope for 2022? Because as Rob Fyfe said also in a previous interview, people are tired. They're not going to get any less tired as we go into another year of it.
Yeah, look, and I guess the thing that I hope is that those parts of the public sector that are able to collaborate well with the private sector and get the best out of both systems or both sectors are able in some way to transfer some of that knowledge to those parts of the public sector which seem to find it very difficult to share knowledge, to welcome constructive criticism, and particularly to welcome different ideas. And, on one level, I think that the Ministry of Health has done an extraordinary job. It was never set up to do the job it's done in COVID. At the same time, I'm in the camp that says I never panicked about the vaccine rollout. I just thought it was a lot of noise. I thought, let's see what the process is like, and we've got to where we needed to be. So that's gone well. But things like saliva testing, rapid antigen testing, the things which would make it easier to bolster the various defences that we have, they're still not available and have been derided and rejected and pushed back against, despite the evidence that, particularly in the case of saliva testing, it would have been a great idea to have got on with it a hell of a lot quicker. So I think that's one of the big disappointments for the year. I did want to cast forward perhaps a little further than most commentators would to this Christmas Eve special in about 7 million years' time.
We'll still be here, team.
I anticipate an interview with a couple of paleontologists who found the remains of my cat in the back garden. It just got me thinking about what bones are in my place.
Oh, Patrick, RIP to whoever that was, and much loved, clearly.
Yeah. Jigsaw.
Oh, bless Jigsaw. I love it. I was at a beach place a while ago and there was this huge big sign saying Seamus rests here. It was an enormous sign. Obviously a much beloved dog would be my guess. Susie Wiles, it has been an extraordinary time of performance and exposure for the science and the medical community, that's for sure. And we were celebrating earlier, world record time in coming up with some of these vaccines and treatments. But here in New Zealand as well, it's been a wonderful time for science communication. I met someone else last week, the wonderful paediatric doctor, who's going to be speaking a lot more about the rollout for children. It has unearthed just how much talent we have in our science and in our medical research sector.
Yeah, and you know, it's fragile, right? I mean, this pandemic has obviously impacted on everybody. It's having huge impacts on our younger researchers and their kind of career progression. There's a massive review underway, actually, to see about really shaking up the system and supporting people better. So it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out next year and whether we really do get some stability for younger researchers. Because many people, you know, you've got people in their 30s and 40s who are on short-term contracts, don't know from one year to the next, but, you know, are the people involved in our response, in the genome sequencing and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, interesting times ahead.
Such a good point, actually. I mean, just last week we were talking to a PhD graduate who's now a working scientist. Many PhD students are working scientists. But crowdfunding for this groundbreaking work on the links between CFE and long COVID, and doing things like she has been able to isolate what are like little clots, which may well be sort of part of sucking up energy. This is in the case of some of these debilitating energy, depleting illnesses. So just absolutely groundbreaking work. And she's crowdfunding to keeping that going. And I recall a little bit earlier, the PhD students who came on, you know, they're only allowed to work a certain number of hours a week outside of their science in order to put food on the table. And yet they're not treated as employees when they're doing the work on the science. So really good point.
Our science system is run on PhD slave labour, basically, and they don't even make, a living wage. So it's a very precarious system, and one that really privileges those who are able, who have financial support behind them to take on this job. And it should be a job that's available for everybody.
I guess it's a time, isn't it, where we've learned so much about our strengths and weaknesses, and now we're going into even more of the challenge. And we just hope that we learn and that we do make some changes to a lot of systemic things. And to your point earlier, Neil and Bridget, welcome back to an opposition, because it is absolutely fundamental to scrutiny a lot of these things.
Yeah, and I think for the first time in a couple of years now, we've actually got a bit of unpredictability in New Zealand politics. You know, we don't know what next year is going to bring in terms of the Labour national battle. And I think, having a sensible opposition, hopefully, that takes a measured look at these things is going to be really good for New Zealand's politics, because, one thing we've learned from COVID is that as much as we can say the response overall has been good, there have been problems, there's been missteps, and it's really important we have an opposition highlighting that and giving the government that scrutiny that makes them do better.
All right. In the meantime, we hope as much as is possible for everybody who's been working so, so hard, and let's acknowledge those businesses, Patrick, you know them for sure, who've been dealing with curveball after curveball, really stressful, difficult decision after difficult decision for nigh on 2 years now. And we just hope that wherever people are in contributing to how we deal with this pandemic, there's a Christmas Day coming, and for some of them anyway, a good number of them, one hopes, there's a really good break coming, because I think everybody could do with one. Appreciate your time and contribution this year. You're all busy people. Thank you very, very much, and happy Christmas to Neil Jones, Bridget Morton, Susie Wiles, Andrew Holden, Patrick Smalley, and indeed all of our regular commentators on 9 to Noon who put so much work and time into it. Kia ora, guys, and have a great Christmas.